and girls, welcome to the final edition of Awesomania for 2023. It's me, it's Mike, and I'm being joined by our good friend Fatimus Prime, Mr. Matt Carroll.
What's up, buddy?
Doing good. For those who don't know, this is the third attempt of recording this episode. The first time, Matt got lost in the nether. The second time, Matt got lost in the nether. The third time, we're hoping Matt does not get lost in the nether.
Yeah, we are open, man.
So, unlike that one time at Bandcamp. Anyways, so we got three pay-per-views, starting off with WWF Capital Carnage for 1998. This is the UK exclusive pay-per-view that the WWF did. Then you got WWF Rock Bottom in Your House, which was the following weekend and was the regular standard pay-per-view for the WWF. And then at the end of the month, we had WCW Starrcade to end the year of 1998. And we're actually going to go in reverse. We are going to start with Starrcade and work our way to Capital Carnage. So, and if you're expecting us to do news and notes, we will. Just kind of maybe in between matches or during matches and stuff like that as the show goes on. So with that, Matt, would you please talk to us about WCW Starrcade 98?
Sure. WCW Starrcade 1998 on December 27th, 1998 from the MCI Center in the greatest city in the world, Washington, D.C., its first match featured Billy Kidman in a triple threat match for the Cruiserweight title against Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrera. There were some shenanigans in that match towards the end, and Eddie Guerrero was involved in those shenanigans, challenged Billy Kidman to a title match right away after Kidman defeated the other two. And Kidman again beat Eddie Guerrero. Our third match was Norman Smiley defeating Prince Iaukea by submission. Match number four, Perry Saturn versus Ernest the Cat Miller. Match number five, which is my kind of what the fuck is this match even doing here match, is Brian Adams, a.k.a. Crush, and Scott Norton with Vincent, a.k.a. Virgil, defeating Fit Finlay and Jerry Flynn. And as I said, Mike, in our pre-show prep, I was like, why were Fit Finlay and Jerry Flynn wrestling air? As is our joke, we talk about when good guys wrestle better, not so good wrestlers, he's not wrestling anybody. Then the sixth match of the card was for the television championship. It was Conan defeating Chris Jericho by submission. Then we have Eric Bischoff against Ric Flair, Eric Bischoff getting the victory. Match number eight was Diamond Dallas Page defeating Giant in a singles match. And then our main event of the evening was Kevin Nash defeating Bill Goldberg in a no disqualification match for the World Heavyweight title.
And that's the match we're going to watch right now. Now, if you go into the blog post with the episode that you're listening to right now, we actually have the links to the matches that we're going to be watching on the episode, so feel free to click that link, go to YouTube, get free your first ad, have yourself at 0 seconds, and we're going to give you a few minutes where we can go, hell, by the way, last episode we talked about the possibility of CM Punk coming back to WWE. Guess what? He came back to WWE.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about that and what I was going to say about that in the recording. And I know I've been a very anti kind of CM Punk person on this podcast. But what I realized was I was anti CM Punk, not in WWE, because I will say that I did smile when I saw him and I was like, this is cool.
And I like the fact that, like, all eight men who were going to be in the match for the main event were literally pulled aside and told, oh, by the way, Punk is coming out as soon as your match is over. So, like, they were told literally before they were going to walk out the door, out the curtain.
That is cool. So, I guess...
So, when you saw the video of Seth Rollins, like, losing his cool and all this other stuff, it was like, A, it was real because that's how he really does feel about Punk, but it was also scripted in a way to kind of get people talking. And you know, you and I were having this chat before we started recording about UFC, about how, you know, obviously they're WWE and UFC are under the same umbrella now with TKO, and you're telling me about how these two UFC fighters are sat like kind of next to each other in the crowd, I guess last night or whatever. And of course, we're recording this on Sunday, December 17th, for those wondering. And they started like having words and brawling in the crowd. And it's like, yeah, it's because you're drumming up interest in the match that these guys are going to have soon.
Yeah, basically, the story that I told Mike was I'm in a UFC group chat with my brother and some of our friends, and they brought it up, and I said, "Well, you guys forget that TKO is WWE and UFC now." I said, "So you don't be surprised if you see a lot more of this because there's nobody better in the combat sport business of making an angle mean something than WWE." I said, "So WWE probably went to them and said, 'Hey, you want to get business for this angle? Put them next to each other and make them fight.'"
Yeah, and look at now with Seth Rollins and CM Punk.
Yep.
Like, look at the reaction that Seth Rollins had when Punk debuted at Survivor Series. Look at that promo, that segment that they did on this past Monday Night Raw. You know, that spoke volumes. It's when those two finally touch, and it'll probably be at WrestleMania 40 in Philly. That so many people are going to be invested in that match because of A, the real life animosity, but also the fact that they're able to take it and turn it into a legitimate storyline within the show
Yep.
and make money off of it. Unlike, say, AEW, who doesn't know how to do that and it has more prima donnas and deals with lawyers more than anything. So.
Which again is one of what a part of what was going to lead me to my one point that I was going to make, which was, I will admit to this, cop to this straight up. I have a WWE bias. I am biased towards WWE in the wrestling business. I didn't think that I was. Well, I knew I didn't like AEW. I wasn't a fan of AEW. I shouldn't say I didn't like it. I just wasn't a big fan of what they were doing. But, you know, when they had Punk, I was knocking Punk. It was this, it was that. But then, like I said, seeing Punk come into WWE made me smile, and it made me realize that it wasn't that I didn't like CM Punk. It was that I didn't like CM Punk not in the WWE.
And not only that, but the other thing is that you could tell he's a lot happier in WWE because he has been welcomed with more open arms. I mean, you look at when he was at NXT Deadline this past Saturday, where he approached Cora Jade. You know, last time he was with WWE, Cora Jade was like a kid and she made something for Punk, and she, like, there's video of her meeting Punk, giving him the thing that she made for him and crying. And you know, so they had like a reunion at the pay-per-view, or yeah, the premium live event for NXT, where he goes up there and says like, "I'm proud of you," you know. And it's like, and he was apparently at NXT on Tuesday to check out and talk to the talents and work out with them, because I'm pretty sure he's using the Performance Center to try to get himself into ring shape again, because it's been a few months for him. And yeah, and it's like he's seeing the future, and he's going, "The future's good."
He was also there because they were doing that whole storyline thing of what brand is he going to
Well,
sign, right?
no. I'm talking about this was after he had already signed.
Oh.
And like, but the thing is for him is that he sees the future with what they're doing with NXT, and he goes, "I'm actually very confident about the future because of this."
Yeah.
So like, it helps change the opinion that he had like 10 years ago when he left to now, because he can look at it and he could see the work that they're all putting in and the training that they're putting in, and you know, the people that are in place to actually make these people better. And he's going like, This shit's in good hands.
Yeah.
But things that are not in good hands is this match from WCW Starrcade 1998 when Goldberg defends his title against Kevin Nash in a no disqualification match. We've given you all enough time to pull it up, so we apologize if any ads come up, but I don't think this one will. And away we go. I know you like that segue.
Yeah.
I have those from time to time. I can pull a good segue every now and then.
All right, here we go.
It's crazy the thing, and I want to bring this up. This isn't wrestling related, but like, obviously with Starrcade, this is actually the second time they're doing Starrcade at MCI Center, because obviously the MCI Center opened in December of 1997. So obviously WCW had the honor of doing the first ever wrestling show in the MCI Center the year prior. But it's crazy now because earlier this past week, I believe it was on Wednesday, it was either Tuesday or Wednesday of this past week, Ted Leonsis, the owner of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, which owns the Washington Capitals, Wizards, Mystics, Capital One Arena, then known as MCI Center, came to a non-binding agreement with the state of Virginia for Potomac Yard in Alexandria, Virginia, to open up a whole new arena inside of an entertainment district, which would then move the Caps and Wizards to Alexandria, Virginia. So,
which everybody's freaking out about, because I listen, even though I live in New Jersey currently, I listen to all the DC sports radio on the Odyssey app. But everybody's freaking out about that. They're like, oh, well, then they should change their name to the Virginia Capitals.
I don't think they. Well, first off, the Capitals and the Wizards are both originally in Landover, Maryland.
That's what I was saying. But that was
so. So like that part doesn't bother me.
That was the point that I was going to make. Was that? Well, then why weren't they called the Maryland Wizards and the Maryland Capitals back in the day?
Especially the fact that Landover was closer to Baltimore than it was to DC.
Exactly.
But the thing is, though, is that. But the thing that bothers me about it, it's not about like I think what they're trying to do for the teams is really good, but for somebody like me who lives in Montgomery County, Maryland, and you know the metro stops very well. My closest metro stop is Shady Grove Metro. Shady Grove to Gowrie Place Chinatown, which is the metro stop to Capital One Arena, is about 40 to 45 minutes from Shady Grove to Capital One Arena, Gowrie Place, Chinatown metro stop. They just opened up Potomac Yard metro stop, which I'm pretty sure was a condition for Leonsis to want to do this, that they had to have a metro stop at the entertainment district's location. They just opened it up in May. It's the metro stop right after Reagan National Airport.
What is it, on the blue line?
Yeah, blue and yellow. It's kind of like it's just like with Reagan National, where you can go to, but it would actually be faster to take it via yellow line, because yellow kind of is more of a direct shot, whereas blue line kind of backtracks and then comes around. And the thing is that I know for a fact, because I just had to do it last month when I flew out to Minnesota and back. You know, okay, it may be like an extra 5 minutes from Reagan National Airport to Potomac Yard, but from Gallery Place Chinatown to Reagan, it's like an extra 15, 20 minutes. So you're adding like maybe an extra 20 to 30 minutes from Gallery Place Chinatown to Potomac Yard.
See, here's the thing, though, Mike.
And for the record, we're just talking through entrances. For anyone who's listening, you're not missing much right now.
You're talking to somebody you're going to get no sympathy from, because anytime I try to go see the Commanders, the Redskins now Commanders, it took me like an hour and 25 minutes on the metro to get there.
But the difference between the Commanders and the Capitals and the Wizards is that the Capitals and Wizards were always somewhere where it was central that everyone can get to. no matter where you lived, you had a central location. Like you could hop the Green Line and it would take you to Capital One Arena. You can hop the Red Line, it would take you to Capital One Arena. You can hop the Yellow Line, it would take you to Capital One Arena. The Blue Line wouldn't take you to Capital One Arena, but it would drop you not that far from Capital One Arena with Metro Center. And that's the thing that everyone is more really upset about, is the fact that this thing that was very central to everybody is no longer going to be central, because it's not just the people in Maryland like me, but people in DC are getting screwed by this.
You can't walk around there after the games anymore. You used to be able to like walk around to get dinner somewhere. Now you walk 5 feet from the arena and you're probably going to get mugged or get stabbed or
Not
get shot.
no.
So who wants to go to the game anymore?
Well, let's be honest. You can blame Leonsis for that, for opening up the sports book. Because the moment he opened up that sports book in Capital One Arena, you just drew out all of the trash.
Well, it was going downhill before then anyway, but
Well, it was going downhill because of the pandemic, and not a lot of people were coming into DC. Once you start getting more of the DC, like the workers back in there, which has been slowly happening, a lot of that stuff then starts getting pushed out more. So it's kind of like an ebbs and flows thing on that one. But because I was literally there, recently on Black Friday, and it was like it wasn't a big problem for me. So, and actually I was there this past Saturday for the Caps Rangers game, and it wasn't a big problem for me. Oh man, a lockup. How exciting. But that's the thing though. That's the, 'cause like even people in Virginia are upset about it, because it's like what used to be an easy trek to get there is now not an easy trek to get there for most of them. Plus, let's be honest, driving in Virginia sucks.
well, let's just say this. Every city deals with this, so
Yeah, but Virginia is on another level of suck.
no, Maryland drivers are way worse than Virginia drivers, and it's not even close.
Okay, Maryland drivers, I will concede, are not the greatest, but at least our roads are better and they're not always under construction.
Yes, they are, dude. I drive down 95 in Maryland. It's always under construction.
Well, that's because they're probably trying to put in toll lanes, because that's what our last governor wanted. But anyways, enough politics. But yeah, it's just weird seeing this match take place a year after it opened, knowing now that
What I
probably.
was going to say was that I went to the original Starcade, and I went to 99 Starcade too, because it was in MCI Center. And they basically did it there 3 years in a row, and I went to two of the three. I can't remember why I didn't go to this one, but
Because you knew what the result was going to be and you're going to be pissed. But no, but the thing is, though, is that it's interesting that we're seeing this. It's been a year since this place has opened. And knowing that in about 4 years, WWE and even AEW may not even go to this venue anymore. They may go to the new place that in Alexandria. Like it's a to be determined type thing there. I mean, I hope they still do the WWE and AEW shows at Capital One Arena, because
once the Caps and the Wizards move out of there, that place is going to shut down.
actually it's not, because Leonsis owns Capital One Arena and he's already said that he's planning on upping the number of concerts, and he's going to move the Mystics, who currently play at the Washington Sports and Entertainment Arena over in Southeast, which that area is really bad. You turn around the corner, then you're in a horrible area. And I think that's why he's going to move the Mystics into Capital One Arena, because that way he can keep them in a better part of town. And then what was it? Oh, and they're going to reduce the number of seats from like the almost 19,000 to like 12,000. So like he has plans for Capital One Arena. He's still going to use it for concerts and the Mystics and stuff like that. And he'll probably move the DC, the Capital City Go-Go, which is the Wizards like farm team, I guess you can say. So.
So
Oh,
yeah, so
and George and the Georgetown Hoyas will still play basketball there.
this match is pretty boring at this point.
Yeah, we're talking more about an arena than we are about this match.
Oh boy. Yeah, how do we feel, Mike, at this point in his career about Goldberg? I was gonna say, how did you feel about him then, but I forgot you weren't watching
I
wrestling
wasn't
anymore.
watching yet at this point. We're still like 2 years away from me.
Yeah. When did you start? 2001?
Late 2000.
Oh, okay.
Like October, November of 2000. But it wasn't until the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match that kind of got me hooked in. Oh yeah, by the way, I forgot to mention, this isn't in English. This is in another language. For the commentary?
What is it, Spanish?
No, I think it's like Italian or German.
Wow.
So yeah, I forgot to mention. Yeah, this isn't another language. This was the best I can find on like YouTube or Dailymotion or Vimeo or whatever.
Oh, please.
Man, like Goldberg concussed himself with that spear. Like, did you see him get up all woozy and stuff after hitting it?
Yeah, well, Goldberg concussed a lot of people with a lot of things.
He concussed himself a lot of times too.
I wonder what, especially back in this era, what the average number of concussions that guys got were, because you probably figured that these guys probably got a concussion every night, a slight one.
Well,
Because back then they were still doing like unprotected chair shots and shit like that. So these guys probably had hundreds of concussions in their lives.
oh, probably. It's like, well, it's eventually what did in like Chris Benoit.
Oh, you know. Nash almost dropped the big fellow there.
Well, both of them are kind of botching things a little bit at this point. Like, it almost seems like both guys are gassed already.
Well, that is true, but also though Nash, I feel like was always not a terrible worker, but he's in the ring with a guy who's not a good worker, so like Goldberg doesn't know how to adjust to make it easier for Nash to lift him up. So Nash is having to use a lot, like when he lifts up Goldberg, he's having to use pure strength as
Yeah.
opposed to, Goldberg giving him the boost necessary and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, compared to like when he works with
Like Scott Hall or Hulk Hogan or somebody who at least has a decent idea of what they're doing.
yeah, or even better one, like I remember what was it? It was a table of three, and I think it was Nash, Big Show, and like one other big guy, and they all said it's like we like working with the smaller guys because working with the smaller guys makes it easier for us to work.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Because like even Nash was like, I like working with Shawn Michaels because Michaels can take all the bumps and make me look good. And but then when the time comes for it, we can do good business together.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of Shawn Michaels, did you see on Shannon Sharpe's podcast, Ric Flair was on there, and he said to Rick, he said, "Give me your greatest of all time, or your Mount Rushmore," right? Which I hate those Mount Rushmore things, but
Well,
he
they're
said,
so subjective.
"Oh, I know." But so what Flair said was Austin, Hogan, Taker, and Shawn Michaels, and he goes, "And Shawn Michaels is the greatest of all time." And Shannon Sharpe was like, "Really, over you?" And he was like, "Oh yeah." He said, "Not on the microphone, but in the ring, nobody can touch Shawn." Which, coming from a guy who's one of the greatest workers of all time, is a pretty good compliment.
Speaking of Flair, One of the interesting things about Flair is, so you know, Flair is with AEW now.
Unfortunately.
But the deal is one of the most unique deals in wrestling.
Okay.
Because, so Ric Flair has his own energy drink called Woo Energy. Hey, look, he just concussed him like he did the Bret Hart. Anyways, perfect timing for the Goldberg kick. But apparently, the energy drink brand is paying AEW every time Ric Flair appears.
Really?
Yes. So Flair is essentially appearing to AEW for free, but AEW is making money off of the appearance.
That's weird.
So it's a very unique deal. Okay, I'll give Goldberg credit. That was a pretty nice move.
Yeah.
You gotta give
Even
credit when
Flash,
credit's due.
he had flashes of being good.
But the thing is, though, is that all right, and here comes all the shenanigans. Is that Disco Inferno? Of
Yes.
course he joined NWO. And now he's dead. Hey, look, Bam Bam. Wait, Bam Bam's in NWO? Or is
I
he?
don't necessarily. So, I think, wasn't all of this around the time when that fucking stupid ass movie came out too, that
Oh
Ready
yeah,
to
Ready the
Rumble?
Rumble. Yeah, that's right.
And all these guys were in it except for Kevin Nash. So I think
Oh,
they're
here's
doing
the
that.
cattle prod from Scott Hall.
Yeah. Actually, I said stupid ass movie. I really enjoyed Ready to Rumble. It's entertaining as shit. It's funny. It's
I
dumb.
actually haven't seen it.
It's awesome.
But anyway, so Scott Hall just did the infamous cattle prod.
Goldberg looked like he was trying to kick out and then realized, oh, I'm not supposed to kick out.
Well, the crazier thing is that you could see him still kind of twitching from the being shocked. But what was it? I haven't seen Ready the Rumble yet. But yeah, but that's the thing about Ric Flair and AEW. The whole deal is that apparently when he shows up, his energy drink brand pays AEW for him for his appearance.
Interesting.
I mean, hey, if you need money, that's how you're gonna get it, I guess. I don't know how Flair gets paid though, but yeah, you could see he's still like all jittery from being shocked. Like, look at the way he falls out of the ring.
All right, so that was the 1998 Starcade match.
God, he gets him like right in the heart with that thing too.
Yeah, that thing wasn't a real cattle prod, dude.
Well, it was still a shock machine
No,
though.
it wasn't. It was a look at it.
Oh
He
yeah, it's taped. But it's a real one, but they taped over the actual shock part to dumb it down. That's so crazy. I didn't realize that until we saw that part where Hall was like walking up the ramp and he shows it to the camera. It's like, wait, they taped on it?
Yeah, you can't really shock somebody in the chest with a cattle prod. You might stop their heart.
Yeah.
So,
But maybe something got through, but it
no,
was dumbed down a little bit.
he's acting.
Yeah. We're talking about Goldberg here. Him and acting.
He didn't do a bad job selling it. I mean, it was a little over the top, but he didn't do a bad job.
All right, so we have seen we have seen what's it called? The main event of Starrcade, Nash versus Goldberg. It was exactly what we expected.
Yep.
It is your standard Goldberg match. We're not going to shit on Nash because Nash had to work with Goldberg. But yeah, not the greatest.
No,
No.
definitely.
The ending was marred, obviously, but yeah. So you know what that means, right?
What's that?
It's time for In Your House Rock Bottom.
It is.
Which, for the record, when we get to this match, I would like to apologize for the audio, and I would like to apologize for the blurriness of the video. This is again one of those where, oh, honestly, all three of these matches were the best that I could find. Like, it was actually kind of hard.
This is why it sucks with these streaming services not allowing screen sharing, because we have to do this bullshit and it's a pain in the ass.
Yep. So anyways, Rock Bottom In Your House took place on December 13th, 1998, at the General Motors place in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. For Sunday Night Heat, we had four matches. We had Dwayne Gill, who was the WWF Light Heavyweight Champion, defeat Matt Hardy. Dwayne Gill had the job squad of Al Snow, Scorpio, and Bob Holly with him, and Matt Hardy had his brother Jeff with him, and that match was 1 minute 2 seconds.
Pin me, pay me. Job squad, baby.
In the second match on Heat, you had Kevin Quinn defeat Brian Christopher in singles competition in 2:23. Then you had Triple H with Billy Gunn, China, and Road Dogg defeating draws with Animal in singles match in 1:37. And then you had the New Age Outlaws of Billy Gunn and Road Dogg defeat the Acolytes of Bradshaw and Farouk by disqualification in tag team competition in 2 minutes flat. Which then brings us to our main card, where we had D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry with Jacqueline and Terry Runnels, the Pretty Mean Sisters, defeating Supply and Demand of The Godfather and Val Venus. Obviously the Nation is dead at this point. And that match was 5 minutes 54 seconds long. Then you had another tag team match where the Headbangers of Mosh and Thrasher defeated the Oddities of Golga and Kurrigan with Giant Silva and Luna Vachon in their corner. That was 6 minutes 29 seconds. Then in singles competition, you had Steve Blackman defeating Owen Hart by count out in 10 minutes and 26 seconds. And then in six-man tag team action, you had the Brood of Edge, Christian, and Gangrel defeating the Job Squad of Al Snow, Bob Holly, and Scorpio with Head in 9 minutes 8 seconds. Then in a striptease match, you had Goldust defeat Jeff Jarrett, who had Deborah with him, by disqualification in 8 minutes 6 seconds. I am so glad we don't have to watch that match. And then you had tag team action for the tag team titles, where the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, defeated the Corporation of Big Boss Man and Ken Shamrock with Shawn Michaels in 16 minutes and 10 seconds. And then in singles competition for the WWF Championship, Mankind defeated The Rock with Mr. McMahon and Shane McMahon by referee stoppage. In 13 minutes, 35 seconds. However, I don't think Mankind actually got the title. As I scroll up real quick.
He did not.
Yeah, he did not. And then next up is, and the final match, the main event, which is the match we're going to watch. It is a buried alive match for the right to compete in the 1999 Royal Rumble match. Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Undertaker with Paul Bearer. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, I hope you were able to use this to pull up the match that we have in the blog. I want to apologize for both audio and visual. It is not the most visually appealing and is not the most audio appealing either. So with that, away we go. Luckily, this time we get one of the vignettes. There we go.
The vignettes are are part of what makes these matches so goddamn long.
But you know what, though? For the casual viewer who's probably watching with friends who are wrestling fans, it's going to tell the story for them.
Well, I understand, but like we don't need to have like if you're watching a Daily Motion video, you already know that like what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't tell you, Mike, there's a chance in the next 2 years that I'll be moving back to Virginia.
Nice.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that off air.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. This is when Taker started doing his whole this is when he started doing Ministry Taker.
Yeah, this is kind of the catalyst for it because almost all of 99 he's doing ministry stuff. And then 2000 is when the American Badass came around.
Yep. So weird seeing Kane and Austin working together. Actually, I'm not gonna lie, the audio has gotten a little bit better now that I've like lowered it excessively. Well, given how, well, actually, no, the ministry's already in full swing because obviously the acolytes of Bradshaw and Farouk.
Well, yeah, but still all the way through 99, he did
Yeah.
it, is what I'm saying. Right, I remember when they crucified Steve Austin.
Not gonna lie, I think this is the best theme song for Taker, for like as the Dead Man or whatever is his ministry music.
Yeah, I liked it, but I always found it hilarious and awesome that his theme song at one point was Rollin' by Limp Bizkit.
Well, I'm talking about like Dead Man, like not like Dead Man Inc. Like American Badass or
No,
whatever,
I
but
know,
like
but I'm saying I think it was funny that at one point
it worked though for him for a while.
it did. No, you're not wrong. It did.
But like for me personally, I always of his like I guess the Dead Man era, his ministry music is always top notch for me. And I think it's just because it's like that gothic orchestra. But it has like a bit of a heavy metal beat to it as well. I've always liked that about Taker's music. Like I would take that over his like what he ended up virtually retiring with, or ending his career with, which was like the Graveyard Symphony or whatever.
Where do we stand on this stip?
I'm glad it's only every once in a while.
I hate the stipulation. I think it's so stupid. I mean, shit. How long does it take to bury somebody? I mean, goddamn. Like, I feel like half the goddamn match is gonna be whoever gets buried alive being buried.
I think honestly, for me, it's more along the lines of it's not a bad match, but I am glad that it only happens every once in a while and not all the time. But like in today's day and age, we don't have anyone that's really Undertaker anymore. Like we had Bray Wyatt, but he unfortunately passed away earlier this year.
Yeah.
And the only character who could have made that work with a Buried Alive match would be Bray Wyatt. But we don't have that anymore. So who, like, what character would be able to truly benefit from a Buried Alive match today? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I more look at. I more look at the practicality of who it can be used for and how it can help develop that character more, because that's the whole point of the match. It's kind of like if you do a Hell in a Cell match, it shouldn't be done every once in a while. It shouldn't be done all the time. It shouldn't have its own pay-per-view. But it's a great way to end a feud.
Oh, exactly. It's the best way to end a feud.
And that's kind of how I feel about Buried Alive. Buried Alive is the same thing, but Buried Alive is also more character driven towards a specific character type. Like when you had Mankind Undertaker, that worked for them.
Yeah, that, in my opinion, though, that should have been the only one. Like, they didn't need to, this doesn't need to be a Buried Alive match. This need just make it a friggin' single no DQ or some shit. I don't know.
But the thing is, though, is that this makes sense, though. Because, like, as we were watching the vignette, because I didn't know the full story going into this match, because again, I wasn't watching yet at this time yet. Like, part of the story is that, like, okay, he's done the crucifixion to Austin, and he's doing this whole ministry thing. And he openly says, now all I have to do is bury you alive to complete what he's trying to do. So this is actually fitting in on Undertaker's character and what he, as a character, is trying to do with Stone Cold Steve Austin. So this match does work in that essence. You see what I'm saying on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like it's not a matter of like another example. We'll get to this one in a few years. But what was it? Survivors or not, yeah, Survivor Series 2003. You had the Buried Alive match between Vince McMahon and Undertaker. And that was used as the vehicle to get rid of Taker's American Badass Big Evil Red Devil gimmick to bring back the Dead Man a few months later at WrestleMania. So, like, when you look at the match from those perspectives, yeah, they serve the purpose of what they're supposed to do. I mean, one gimmick match that's kind of stupid is the casket match.
Well, yeah, that's a stupid gimmick too, but
Because unlike a Buried Alive match where you can actually do something with it afterwards. Most times after a casket match, you have somebody like Randy Orton lighting the sucker on fire just to kind of write off Taker for a little bit, only to come back and not really do any changes to his character. You know what I mean?
yeah.
Because, and again, I don't know the full storyline, but I'm pretty sure if Taker gets buried and when he comes back, it's what helps push his ministry gimmick even further. Because being buried alive would, I guess push him over an edge or something like that, or enlighten him through more of the darkness or whatever.
Well, you can always tell when Taker is injured and gonna go away, because he either has a casket match or a buried alive match that he's gonna lose, and he's gonna go away for a while. You can always tell that based on the stint nowadays in hindsight. Oh, Taker was injured and needed time off.
What's the best way to write out Undertaker? Let's just put him in a casket.
Exactly. That's literally what they did, was they said, oh, we need to write them off. How do we do it? We murder him.
But it's okay because the Undertaker is able to come back from it without being like truly affected, because, well, technically speaking, he's already dead.
Yeah. Oh, here goes the Spanish announce table. Where's Hugo? There he is. Hugo Suslovich.
Now we just get our basic wrestling in the ring. Oh, and speaking of injuries, Kenny Omega's in the hospital due to diverticulitis.
Diverticulitis.
Yeah, so he's out currently indefinitely for AEW,
And
which
let me
means.
say that, like, I've seen people like giving him shit. That's actually no joke. Like, my dad has that, and it's freaking debilitating.
And Brock Lesnar has it.
Yeah, it's fucking debilitating.
And obviously, that's going to put the World's End tag team title match between the Golden Jets of Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho against Ricky Starks and Big Bill on the line. So it's unknown if that match is going to happen now at World's End. So we'll see. And also, Charlotte Flair is going to be out for 9 months with a knee injury. Charlotte Flair got hurt on not this past Friday's episode of SmackDown, but the weekend before, the Friday before's episode. And she was announced on Friday as being out for 9 months due to a knee injury.
Yeah, crazy.
So I need you to fight Andrade because they're still married, so that way you can go nurse your future wife.
Yes. Speaking of, I'm scrolling Twitter, wrestle Twitter. Dude, freaking AJ Styles came back enormous.
Well, I mean, he's been off for a few months.
And so did freaking what's with guys making their returns and being fucking brick shit houses when they come back? Jesus Christ, Randy Orton was.
Well, when all you have time to do is work out, you're going to get jacked.
Yeah, but Styles has been hurt before and been out for a long period of time and never looked this jacked.
Yeah, but he also wasn't making WWE type money.
Yeah, but still, dude, I mean, these guys are freaking.
Are you getting hot and bothered, Matt?
No, I'm just like, God damn, like I wish I could look like that, man. Fuck, I wish pizza made you look like that. I'd be the most jacked dude of all time.
That's probably the difference. They aren't eating pizza all the time.
That's why I said I wish pizza made you look like that, because then I'd be more ripped than them.
And then I'm over here eating Raisin Bran Crunch, wrecking toilets.
First, Mike.
Hey man, gotta get your fiber somehow. But wrecking toilets like Kevin Nash wrecking Goldberg's winning streak. But
Oh, was that the first loss in the
yeah, that was Goldberg's first loss.
Oh wow. All right, so we got them. They've been fighting inside
The grave.
the grave for a little while here now, and Taker is in there by himself, standing straight up. And he's pulling Austin back in. Oh,
Just like low blow him, dude. It's like
I know. Well,
this is
he
like a,
sucker punched his knee, so I mean that's
but this is like a no DQ match. Just punch him in the nuts, you know?
yeah.
Just like Falcon punch him right there, you know? You can get away with it. It's a no DQ match at the end of the day. I mean, these guys are hitting each other with shovels and shit. Might as well.
Dude, that had to suck wrestling on all that dirt, though. Being sweaty and getting just that dirt caked onto you. Ugh.
Not only that, but it's like you could see them trying to walk up it too, and you can just see that there's no, you have to deal with the lack of consistency.
Yeah. Dude, I would not like let anybody like shake my hand after this. I would go just go right to the shower.
Now they're fighting in the crowd. So, have you watched any of AEW at all recently?
No, not recently. No, I mean, I saw. I actually did see before he got hurt, or before he got the diverticulitis flare up. I did, and this did make me laugh. The Kenny Omega thing, where he called, Big Cass Saw.
Oh, yeah, Big Bill.
Yeah,
Yeah,
where he
dude.
called
Like the only
Stud.
person who got out of that promo looking like $1 million, unfortunately, was Enzo Amore, and he's not even in AEW. But who do you think the devil's gonna be in AEW?
A lot of people are thinking Adam Cole. I don't know.
I don't know how it can be Adam Cole when he's hurt, like legitimately.
Well, that doesn't mean that it still can't be him because there's a masked guy. It could be anybody under the mask, and
Yeah.
then Adam Cole reveals himself to be. I mean, that's the whole point of wrestling is, you suspend disbelief.
Honestly, like I've heard rumors because they're obviously waiting, because obviously this upcoming week, specifically December 21st, is when all of the September, or no, December 20th is when all of the September releases, with the exception of Matt Riddle, who has to wait like an additional 2 days. Their 90-day no compete clauses expire. So like Dolph Ziggler, Mustafa Ali, Riddick Moss, all these
If it
other.
happened to be one of those two, Mustafa Ali or Dolph Ziggler, doesn't make much sense to me. A lot of people said it's probably like, what's his name, Kyle O'Reilly or Bobby Fish, one of those two, or I don't know. You know who I think it is? I think it's going to be Bo Dallas.
Bo Dallas is still under contract to WWE.
I know, I'm joking because he was Uncle Howdy, so.
Yeah, apparently, it's funny that you bring that up because apparently they might try to continue Bray's story through Uncle Howdy.
I mean, I wouldn't mind that too much.
So it'd be interesting to see if they actually follow through with that. But apparently, the big rumor is that Bray Wyatt's going in the Hall of Fame
Oh, nice.
in 2024.
As he
So
should.
And I know some people will be like, oh, he doesn't deserve it. You know, he wasn't really in the business that long, but it's like,
Those people who say that would be incorrect.
you're putting a guy in for his creativity and his, his ability to tell stories and like his ability to make people feel certain ways and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, sure. You know, with The Fiend, Vince booked that character in a way that made Bray Wyatt want to butt heads with him so many times because of the fact that, yeah, it did hurt The Fiend character greatly with the way Vince booked it. But, the fact that like he made you feel with like those Firefly Funhouse segments
Oh,
and stuff like that. And like everyone still remembers Cult Leader Bray with the Wyatt family.
my favorite Bray, personally, but
Oh no, that's a lot of people. I mean, that's almost everybody's favorite. It's like I really wish Bray didn't pass away to see where he was going to go with this latest incarnation of his character. Like that would have been really great to see. And hopefully, who knows, maybe we'll see it with Uncle Howdy. And then the thing that I was going to say, going back to the whole Buried Alive match, it's like that's something that would be in Uncle Howdy's wheelhouse.
yeah.
All right, Taker has Austin, but Austin's stirring. He was trying to bury him.
Well, again, in hindsight, we know how this is going to end.
Oh, I know, but we still got to talk about the match somewhat. We
Yeah.
just can't just bullshit about everything else.
Now, see, technically, I feel like that should be a victory because he already threw a pile of dirt.
But the thing is, though, is that he has to have an, I guess he has to have enough dirt across the body. Okay, so this can has been in play so much.
Uh-oh. So you're gonna take a bump into the hole?
Not
I
necessarily
don't
a
know.
bump, but he will take the stunner into it.
Yeah, I was worried he was going to take a flat back right into the hole, though.
See, this is what's going to win it.
Oh, see, okay, so they made it much easier this time. They learned from their first time, I guess.
Well, this is like what, the third or the fourth Buried Alive match?
The bell ring?
Now,
How much time is left in this match? 4 minutes.
so the video has 4 minutes left.
So did Austin just win or no?
Not yet.
So I guess this is how Austin's gonna win, because Kane is gonna be the one to bury him.
Yep, there's Kane. You called that one. Chicken's like, no, fuck you. I'm running up with the shovel. And Kane's like, no, fuck you. I'm going to hit you down the hill instead.
Those two guys are getting dirt in their uniform, in
Here.
their gear. Oh, hope they have backup gear so that they can, we'll throw that in a washing machine somewhere.
Austin's taking a shower.
Yeah, I would be too. Kane almost slipped into the hole.
Oh, damn. Yo, Taker did what I told him to do earlier in the match to Austin, but did it to Kane instead.
Yep. Nut
He
shot.
is not shot. Kane's like, no, you just nutshotted me. I am choke slamming your ass straight to hell. Oh no, I'm gonna tombstone your ass straight to hell. There's
Austin might
Austin.
Austin might have got Austin and his vehicles, man.
And it's funny, this isn't the first time that, or that this isn't the only time that Kane's gotten involved in a Hell in a Cell or in a Buried Alive match.
I like how Austin got out so that somebody who actually knows how to operate this thing could get into it.
Well, he was never operating it to start with.
Yeah, he was. He drove it out.
No, he didn't, because as soon as he got out, somebody else was actually moving the thing.
Somebody else got in there as soon as he got out.
I think someone was sitting in there with him.
Apparently, this person doesn't know how to operate it much either.
Oh, they're trying not to drop the dirt that's already inside of it. That's why they're trying to be careful with it. Unless he's going like, no, Austin, you have to do it yourself. But like, why isn't the referee calling? Like, come on, Earl. What are you doing? He literally is giving Hebner a beer to call the match. That is the stupidest way to finish a match. It's like, here, have a beer. But now the audio just went to shit again.
Well, at least for most of the match, it was decent.
Oh yeah, exactly. All right, so that was that. that was rock bottom. And now we go to December 6, 1998, at the London Arena in London, England. This was the UK exclusive WWF Capital Carnage. They had one dark match, which was Draws defeating Mosh in 6 minutes. And then for the main card, you had Gangrel defeating Al Snow with Head in 5 minutes, 51 seconds. The Headbangers of Mosh and Thrasher defeating the Legion of Doom, Animal, and Draws in 3:21 in tag team action. Obviously, this is around the time I guess Hawk was having his issues. Then you had Val Venus defeating Goldust in singles action in 5:33. Tiger Ali Singh defeating Edge in 2 minutes 51 seconds. Christian and Sable defeating Jacqueline and Mark Miro in mixed tag team action in 4 minutes 49 seconds. Ken Shamrock defending the Intercontinental Championship by defeating Steve Blackman by submission. And it should be noted that Shamrock had Big Boss Man in his corner. Then you had Triple H defeating Jeff Jarrett in singles action in 6:55. Triple H had China, Jeff Jarrett had Deborah. Then you had the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, defeating D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry to retain their tag team titles in 12 minutes 34 seconds. And this is the one that we had in the things I wouldn't see normally, but it's in London, so it's okay. The Rock defeating X-Pac, who had China and Triple H in his corner, by disqualification in the singles match for the WWF Championship, which ended in 12 minutes, 34 seconds. And then you had your main event, which is a fatal four-way match with Gerald Briscoe as special guest referee and Big Boss Man as the special guest enforcer, as you have Stone Cold Steve Austin taking on Kane, Mankind, and The Undertaker with Paul Bearer in a fatal four-way match, which is the match we're going to do now. So if you've given have you had some time to pull up the match, get through whatever ads you may need to go to, we would like to thank Daily Motion, knock on wood, for not screwing us over like the last time we tried to use them. Or was that Vimeo? I don't remember. Anyways, doesn't matter. And away we go. And this is like 34 minutes, and I don't know why. And this one has better picture and audio. So we're ending this on a higher note in regards to quality. So it should be noted that this match is only 16 minutes and 12 seconds long, but this video is 34 minutes. So I'm not 100% sure we're going to go for the full 34 minutes. Okay, so like it looks like the majority of it is yeah, it looks like the majority a good half the first half of this video is all the introductions. Jay McMahon, son of Vince, Mr. McMahon. So yeah, they're definitely padding this. So we actually have time to talk about whatever now. At least we keep our conversations more about wrestling, at least.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we didn't finish up yet. Liv Morgan's arrest, which I think is heinous, horrific bullshit that she got arrested. But now, text thread with Mike, I literally in all caps wrote, "Stop arresting people for weed." Like, marijuana is legal in most states. Stop arresting people for it. You're just
Yeah,
ruining.
but what
Like,
state did she get arrested in?
have no idea.
Florida. Duh.
Well, either way, fuck off. Like, stop arresting people for marijuana.
But the thing is, though, is that it's not going to factor in anything on it's not going to factor on any of the plans for Liv Morgan in WWE. The reports are that they're still very high on her. They're not going to release her, which is great. And that she's going to have a very big program when she comes back.
That's all well and good, but now that shit's on her fucking record. Like you and I talked about earlier, now it's going to be hard for her to get into the Canada shows. It's going to be hard for her to do some of the other international shows. Like fucking stop arresting people for weed. Like, there's no point to it anymore. Just fucking stop it. God damn it. As a weed smoker myself, stop it. Just stop it. Ugh.
But yeah, but I think what is it? Her arraignment's supposed to be like in February. So they're kind of hoping by the time that comes around that it just kind of goes away.
Hopefully.
And this is still before Vince had the No Chance in Hell theme song.
Oh, change. Well, that's what you got. My little cousin, when he used to sing it when he was littler or when he was younger, he used to go, "No chance, I know what you got."
It's like, hey, I gotta go to the bathroom. Next thing you know, you hear Vince's music go off. Like, no chance. Oh God, we have the hardcore title at this point now. God, that must have been introduced recently.
Yeah, it was pretty recent.
Because like we have not seen anything about the hardcore title on any of these cards that we've been doing. So the hardcore title started November 2nd, 1998, and then was retired on August 26, 2002. Vinnie Jones.
What the hell? I've never actually seen this pay-per-view, so I didn't know that happened. What the hell? Oh, God.
Well, apparently, like, I think he was like a famous like rugby player or something. So remember near the end of its run with the hardcore belt, Bradshaw had a different version of the hardcore title than Tommy Dreamer had a different version of the hardcore title.
Yes.
Apparently, the reason for these changes near the end was because the original belt had become so damaged from wear and tear they had to do this.
Really?
Yeah. So Vinnie Jones is acting as a ringside enforcer, just a big boss man. However, after the brawl, we're about to find out something really funny. J Jerry Briscoe is giving Vinnie Jones a red card, and he's giving Big Boss Man a red card and ejecting them from the ring.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh no, so he was a footballer.
At one point, yes.
Yeah, so he played for what was it? At this time, he was playing for Wimbledon.
Okay.
And then the last year of his career was actually with the Queen's Park Rangers.
Oh, here comes Kane.
Yep.
How long have these entrances been?
Oh, we're 12 and a half minutes in.
Jesus
But
Christ.
that's because you had all the shenanigans going on with, like,
Stupid.
hey, here's your guest timekeeper, and here's what Vince is doing. And oh, look, here's Big Boss Man. And then, oh, we're bringing out Vinnie Jones and doing the thing with Vinnie and Big Boss Man. And of course, we don't have the other two guys in the match yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's what it is. Vince is doing commentary. And we're still waiting on Austin. And here he comes.
This is like, oh, this is just like, this is the type of stuff that if you're not a wrestling fan, makes you bored and not want to watch it.
Mean, that crowd pop was pretty good. And obviously, I wouldn't be surprised if there's stuff in here that's obviously going to plant more seeds for the Buried Alive match the following week. I like how Big Boss Man's selling the punch to the face or whatever by Vinnie Jones. That man's got a face. Like you slam someone's face into the announce table and you just hear JR go, "That man's got a face."
I do like Fatal 4-Way matches because you get some cool combinations in each match. Although we've seen these four wrestle so much in the last goddamn year of 1998 that,
And
like,
97.
yeah. I mean, these four were big money though at that time. Who's world champion at this point? Is it The Rock?
Yeah.
You know, when you were doing your research on this, Mike, do you know why they did this exclusively in the UK, or did it say, or?
I think they're always doing like one or two UK exclusives a year.
Okay. But honestly, I
Oh,
feel like
wow.
this would have been a fun match to have on the what was it? What was it that we just lost?
So, Jim Ross suffered his second Bell's palsy attack on air during this event. He did not officially call matches again for WWF until the main event of WrestleMania 15.
Oh, wow. Is that why McMahon came out?
Probably, yeah. No, Foley's out there now. Or not Foley, JR. But it could be a reason to take some of the pressure off of JR.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't hear the I don't really watch with the audio very often because my speakers are not good on this laptop. So I just don't listen to the audio. I just watch the match. So I can't hear who's calling or what's being said.
Yeah, so it's JR, the King, and Vince.
Oh, okay.
I like how
This is oh, they lost a good opportunity here.
like how they're all using like o almost the same chord.
Well, what I thought would have been hilarious was like if Kane went to if Undertaker was choking Mankind, Kane started coming to choke. The Undertaker, like he did, but the Undertaker was still choking Mankind, and they did like a, like they were all four choking each other, like at the same time would have been funny. I wonder. I've never heard Kane talk about it, but I wonder how that suit was to wrestling, because I know the Mankind suit always sucked, according to Dustin. It didn't breathe. It was so hot. I'm wondering if Kane had that same problem.
I don't think so.
It does look breathable. I mean,
It
it looks like.
looks more breathable just simply for the fact that if you actually look at the black, I think that's the only leather part that's on there, whereas everything else is more like spandex.
Yeah, which is what they should have done with the gold dust suit, because that God, that had to have sucked when you got all sweaty in there, and ugh.
Probably why he did that change for a while, just so he can not have to wear that gear for a little bit.
Did you notice how he would always unzip it in the middle of a match?
Yeah, we've talked about that several times.
I don't remember what I had for breakfast today. I don't remember us talking about it, but if you say we did, we did. Is it in London?
Yeah.
Okay. You like a triple threat or a fatal four way better, Mike?
I mean, I think a triple threat's slightly better because you can have a guy kind of come in, come out type situation. So like when two guys have already been like going at it for a bit, one of them can just kind of step in to give one of them a breather for a little while.
Yeah, see, that's that. It's funny that that's what you like about it, because that's what I don't like about it. Like this, there's two guys. There's guys always fight. There's always somebody fighting somebody. Whereas in that, it's like, oh, this guy's just, laying outside the ring for 20 fucking minutes. Like, what are we doing?
But the thing is, though, is that like the one downside to this is that like if you have man like for instance, you had Mankind and Kane against each other for a while, and then you had Undertaker versus Austin for a while in this match. It's like having that kind of going at the same time. It's like seeing some of the double teams is nice, but I think there's too much sometimes with a fatal four way.
Yeah. Damn, Undertaker, that was mean. Could have squashed his nuts.
Probably did.
Yeah,
I mean, 1 week later, he's gonna like nut Kane. I mean,
Undertaker had a thing with mutilating guys' nuts at this point.
Briscoe like goes to do the count and then like about that. I don't know why Mick Foley willingly took so many unprotected chair shots to the head.
Yeah. Dude, it's just nuts, man. After this, I think I might go watch the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Die Hard?
Santa with muscles.
What the hell is that?
It's a Christmas movie starring Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, no, sorry. Doesn't beat Die Hard.
Well, not too many do, but
You got, okay, you in this order, you have the top two greatest or top three greatest Christmas movies of all time. You ready?
yep.
Die Hard, Batman Returns, Nightmare Before Christmas.
I disagree on only one.
Which one?
I don't like Nightmare Before Christmas. I'm just not a fan.
Yeah, that's fair.
But for the others, I enjoy.
And yes, for those curious, Batman Returns is a Christmas movie. It takes place during Christmas, just like Die Hard and Die Hard 2.
Well, it's funny because I had the debate the other day. They were the person was like, "Oh, it's not, Matt. Why do you always say it's a Christmas movie? It's not." I said, "Is Home Alone a Christmas movie?" And they said, "Yeah, of course." I said, "It's the exact same movie as Die Hard, and actually, the whole movie of Die Hard takes place on Christmas Eve. Only about 10 minutes of Home Alone actually takes place on Christmas Eve. Therefore, Die Hard is more of a Christmas movie than Home Alone."
So Earl Hebner just did the three count for Austin to win the match. Briscoe just took out Earl Hebner, and then Austin took out Briscoe.
All these shenanigans. This was the era of shenanigans in professional wrestling. Every big main event had to end with shenanigans.
I like how Big Boss Man ran right to
Oh, here comes Vinnie Jones back again.
I like how Boss Man went right to Briscoe, like coddling like a baby. Dude, that kick into the gut to set up the stunner for Austin was pretty cool by a bit of it. And then Earl Hebner just stopping my hole, to like just kicking the shit out of Boss Man, giving him the
Boss Man the finger. That was
middle
awesome.
finger.
Oh,
No
no.
wonder Austin gave him a beer at the to give him the victory in the Buried Alive match the following week.
I love that. Giving Boss Man the middle finger. Like, that was hilarious and awesome. Oh, God. That's so good.
You know what? You know what? I'm glad that we did the reverse and ended with Capital Carnage last. Because yeah, the match was like okay, but like holy shit. This part alone was fucking worth it.
Oh, now the three of them are going to drink a beer in the ring.
Earl Hebner taking the court, taking the top, the taking the turnbuckles. That's fucking awesome.
This is so fucking awesome.
Like the match, yeah, the match was okay, but this was cooler.
Love Earl Hebner, dude. Oh, God. So good.
You can kind of hear it in his voice, JR, right now. I know you're not listening, but you can kind of hear it. Where he's saying Stone Cold, you can kind of hear something's not right.
What's he like slurring a little bit?
It doesn't have that same that same pomp and circumstance, like that like enthusiasm and stuff like that. You can clearly tell something's up.
Huh.
I wouldn't say he's slurring his words, but you could tell that he's struggling.
I wonder how much they had to pay Vinnie Jones for this.
Probably not much.
Yeah, because I don't think at this time, I don't think he was a huge movie star yet.
No, he wasn't. Not until at least the 2000s, because I think his like real big film wasn't until like 2006 when he was in the third X-Men movie.
No, because he was in a bunch of Guy Ritchie stuff before that.
Yeah, but he wasn't major in those. Whereas like in obviously the X-Men film, he was the fucking juggernaut. And then the very next year he did The Condemned with Austin.
Would have been nice to have Ben's insight on this because I'm sure he would have watched this, on pay-per-view or whatever.
Yeah, either that or he could have gone to it.
I don't think he did. I think the only show that he went to WWE wise in London was 91 SummerSlam.
Yeah, I thought that was 92.
Oh yeah, sorry, 92. Yeah, whichever year. See, why does he keep getting back in the ring? Like, all right, dude, we got the point.
I think he's just milking time. I think the camera guy was like, keep milking time or something like that. All right, well, that was Capital Carnage. Match was okay, but the ending was hilarious.
Yeah, the ending was, it was a lot of fun.
Like that's what we like to see, like a big fun ending like that. So, yeah. Final thoughts on the three matches we saw.
I guess if I had to pick a favorite match, I would have picked the last one just because of the ending.
I'd have to agree.
I mean, they were all right. 98 was a good year, but I think my two favorite years in professional wrestling ever are 99 and 2000. So, and 2001 was great. I mean, just up until about 07, I thought wrestling was the best shit ever. So I mean, we're really gonna, I think 99 is gonna really start ramping up a lot of stuff, and you're gonna see some cool shit come in, and
You're gonna see the demise of WCW in the making.
I mean, that started back in 97, to be honest.
Well, it really starts, but you really start seeing it in 99.
When was the finger poke of doom?
Literally, so remember how we just watched Starrcade? It was literally the next night on Nitro.
Oh, okay. So then, yeah, that's the when it really starts going downhill.
Yep. So, but yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, it was okay. It was good. But yeah. So, Matt, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Just on Instagram, at the coolest fat kid you know, and actually be on the lookout because if I lose my fantasy football match over these next 2 weeks, I will have to do a photo shoot and post it on Instagram because I will finish in last place with a shirt that says "I suck at fantasy football" with a pink unicorn on it. So, gonna do a little bit of gonna be a little bit of an embarrassing photo shoot, but it'll still be fun. So everybody stay tuned for that. You get to laugh at me a little bit.
Are you going to do a boudoir style?
Maybe, I don't know.
Oh, okay. So pretty much everyone, he's going to be putting up mature content. Be on the lookout.
Yeah, my spicy page.
He's going to create an OnlyFans.
Nobody wants to see that. Ugh.
No, we don't. And then obviously for Ben, you can follow him on Twitter at Bob T Goldfish, Twitch doing the gaming thing with his wife Amy and friend Jordan Johnson, at twitch.com or twitch.tv/321_TV. And of course, also on the Power Rangers podcast, Voices from the Grid, which is on Twitter at VFTG_PR. Click on the link tree to find everything for that. And then, of course, for me, you can follow me on Twitter at TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions. And of course, everything for the show and everything that I do is on txhthockey.com. And that goes for Awesome Mania as well.
And don't forget too that the next starting in January, I will be on for the Royal Rumble and then probably not back again until Mania, as I am kind of reducing my number of shows that I'll be on per year. So just keeping everybody aware of that. And Ben should be back, I believe,
Ben
for our Royal
is
Rumble show.
Ben. Ben is going to be back next month.
Nice.
So the Undisputed Champion is returning next month, and will probably be the dawning of Awesome Mania 3.0.
Oh, God.
because it's like, yeah, we kind of gotta get ourselves back to like. Like we're kind of like in 2.5 because of Ben having to take the medical time off and changes that we had to do to accommodate, and now that he's back, it'll be like, okay, new beginning, yay. So I know that didn't sound like the most enthusiastic yay, but no, it is actually great to be having Ben back. But how we figure everything out, that's what we'll figure out in the coming weeks.
Yep.
Because I know I'm having dinner with Ben on Christmas Day. So,
Nice.
with that, until next time, y'all, we'll see you ringside in the new year.